Good afternoon and welcome to LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. I'm Ray Brewer along with Case Kiefer. And it's a big UFC week, UFC 131 in Vancouver. Case will be there. Case, you've been at virtually every card. UFC seems to have something going on every week. You're there, Octagon side, breaking down all the action, doing a good job for the Las Vegas Sun website. And first of all, for me, what stands out in this fight, guy, is Vancouver. It's also Stanley Cup. Canadians love their hockey. And they love their MMA. Is there enough to satisfy everybody? Is MMA gonna not be as strongly supported in Vancouver?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly gonna be a buzz in Vancouver to begin with. I mean, the Canucks on the verge of winning the Stanley Cup. They're up 2-0 right now. Friday night, as long as they don't sweep the Bruins, which you got to think the Bruins will probably win one game. Friday night's supposed to be Game 5 in Vancouver. At Rogers, the same place where UFC 131 is going to take place the next night, and the event is not sold out, so I really think it could affect it. I think maybe you'll see a few less fans in the seats, maybe. I think some fans maybe were holding off on buying UFC tickets to see if the Stanley Cup got there. Those Stanley Cup tickets are expensive. The UFC went to Vancouver last year for the first time, and it sold out in like less than a day. Didn't this year. And, you know, I heard some people saying maybe people are waiting to see what happens with the Canucks. Well, they saw what happened with the Canucks, so maybe UFC, maybe this one won't be as attended as all the other ones we've seen in Canada.
Yeah, and obviously the main storyline here with 131 is it was supposed to be Brock Lesnar. He was supposed to highlight the card. Everybody wants to see Brock. He's, you know, who knows what the guy's going to do, right? Everybody still thinks he's going to stand on top of the ring and throw some fingers in the air, and everybody wants to see that. And he still has that loyal fan base from WWF or WWE or whatever, you know, acting, wrestling, or whatever he did. But injuries, part of every sport, hit UFC real hard. Not just the main bout with Lesnar. Virtually every fight on here somehow affected with injuries. Case, is the obviously people wanted to see Brock, I guess.
Yeah, people wanted to see Brock, and you know, I feel like this happens, just the nature of the sport, this happens once or twice a year in UFC where a card is just so ravaged by injuries. I think last year the one everyone points to is UFC 108 here in Las Vegas. But I don't know if just one guy pulling out has ever affected a card so much. Brock Lesnar pulling out, look, 131 was never going to be like the card of the year or the biggest names on it. But when you looked at it when Brock Lesnar was still in, you say, wow, this isn't a great card, but man, they have a really good heavyweight bouts on this. You had Dos Santos facing Lesnar. You had Shane Carwin's comeback, who also, I mean, literally was inches away from being the heavyweight champion right now if he would have beat Lesnar last summer at MGM, where it looked like. But anyway, so Carwin's supposed to come back and face this world grappling guy, John Olav Anaminu. Dave Herman, who's probably the best non-UFC or Strikeforce heavyweight regional guy out there, was supposed to make his UFC debut against Joey Beltran, who is, you know, lost two fights in a row, but really tough, talented heavyweight. See, I mean, you had some really good heavyweight fights there. Well, then what happens? Lesnar gets hurt. You have to move Carwin up to the main event. You have to move Herman up to this guy that no one really knows about because he's a grappling guy, and you have to get another newcomer to face Joey Beltran. So it just shows you one guy pulling out affected, you know, three bouts. And then if you look at the card, I think I counted right before we started, I think there are six other fights that were affected by injuries. The main one I think people are pointing to is UFC is really hyping up Donald Cerrone and Mac Danzig as it was going to be a really entertaining big fight. Danzig gets hurt, and what do? They have to go out. Cerrone obviously wants to get paid. He doesn't want to take off and say, I'm not going to fight. So UFC has to go out and sign a guy that no one's ever heard of, Wagner Hosha, and this might be over in a minute and a half now.
Wagner Hosha wins. Mark my words on it.
I think he's plus 500, so he should probably get out there and put some money on it.
I will say, for the record, I'm 2-0 in UFC bets. I hammered the 130 card.
That's true, parlay.
My man Brian Stan parlayed to Frank Mir. Little $10 to 121. Not to brag, not to boast, just to say I've got a little flair for UFC. But in all seriousness, Case, UFC, for me, what sets it apart is that when you go to a UFC night or when you order a UFC fight card on pay-per-view, you're not just seeing the main event. You're seeing a card that has four or five fights you really want to look at. There's a lot of intrigue, a lot of interest. You got the sheet right here for 131. This looks like, to me, a boxing card. You got a main event between De Los Santos and Carwin that, it's interesting. I'm not going to say it's not interesting. But you can make arguments that, you know, I could go without paying $60 to see this. And then you got a rest of a card that's kind of pieced together that, you know, I could pay $60 not to see this. And I think that kind of skepticism, especially coming from a guy like me who's kind of a novice in UFC, right? I think that might be the general consensus of the public. Be the UFC or be sell this to me. What do I want to pay $60 to see on this? I like Shane Carwin, though. I do. But am I going to pay $60 to see him?
Well, one thing is, I think UFC cards are only 50, not like the boxing ones now that are 60. But
Taxes, baby.
I'm not trying to sell you with that. I think a big thing why this card will still do okay, look, it's not going to do great. It's going to be below average for the year in terms of pay-per-view sales. But look, Junior Dos Santos and Shane Carwin, whoever wins this fight is getting the next heavyweight title shot against Cain Velasquez at looks like UFC 136 in Houston. So look, if you talk to anyone that's around that markets UFC, betting-wise, everything-wise, the heavyweight division is still tops. People want to see heavyweights. Well, you're going to see who the second-best heavyweight in the world is and who's going to get to challenge for a belt. So I think they really do have a good kind of selling point for that fight. Like you said, it's not deep after that, but I actually think the there's two other fights on the main card that should be really, really good. Kenny Florian and Diego Nunes. Kenny Florian was one of the best lightweights in the UFC for like the last 6 years. He's had two title shots. Just lost to Gray Maynard to not get his third, or else he would have been fighting Edgar at 125. Since he's never captured the belt, he says, I'm going to drop down to 145 now that UFC is combined with WEC and has those weight classes. And he kind of set off a flurry. Now a bunch of guys have done that. There's actually another guy on this card, Darren Elkins, who did that. If Kenny Florian wins here, he's really close to getting a title shot at 145. And obviously, Florian isn't in the name of like a Brock Lesnar and Anderson Silva, one of those guys. But I think he still is in the second tier. I mean, he's headlined some UFC events. I think he's still a pretty big name. No one knows Diego Nunez, but this guy is really tough. At 125, he had a swollen shut left eye after the first round. People thought the doctor's going to have to stop it. Well, he didn't, and he comes and just destroys Mike Brown the rest of the time. So I think that that fight maybe isn't getting the publicity it deserves. And also, last fight I want to talk about on the main card, Mark Munoz and Damian Maia. Damian Maia, of course, last year fought Anderson Silva for the middleweight title. I think only has two losses his whole career. Mark Munoz, Oklahoma State wrestler. If you know anything about wrestling, you know Oklahoma State is great. He knocked out his last guy in 48 seconds. This is classic Damian Maia, you know, third-degree black belt in jiu-jitsu versus Mark Munoz, superpower in his hands. So I think that should be a really good fight, too.
I love those guys that are good at jiu-jitsu. I mean, for me, it's like, I like the punchers. I like the guys that could roll around and wrestle you. But I think those guys that got the jiu-jitsu always have an advantage. And I'm not just playing. I really think if you're good at jiu-jitsu, you got an advantage because I think it's such a specialty in the mixed martial arts. Looking just at the main event, Carwin De Los Santos. Carwin, I know from when he beat Frank Mir, he's a strong guy. And I know that he doesn't – a lot of these MMA guys, Case – and I'm just speaking off the cuff here. There's a stereotype with them, right? Got the tattoos. They're the, you know, they're the bad guy. They're the tough guy. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to break. They're out there. And here's Carwin. He's an engineer or chemist or whatever he is, right? You know, blue collar guy. And this has kind of always been maybe a little bit of a side thing. Well, now it turns out he's pretty good. He's 12-1. He surprised the world with how he fought against Brock. You know, he dominated Frank when Frank was probably one of the top three heavyweights out there. And here's a guy who, if he wasn't so manila, he could be a star in the UFC. Is manila a correct word?
Yeah,
for him?
I think that.
He's kind of dull.
Absolutely a correct term. He just seems dull. Dull would be the word you use, and I wouldn't disagree. The word I'd use would be awkward. It just seems like he doesn't really embrace the spotlight. It's just not who he is. He's an electrical engineer in Denver. I mean, he's making a ton of money on UFC on the side, I guess, but he just hasn't really embraced that. He's not the typical bad boy, I guess, like you were saying, but then again, neither is Dos Santos, who also really hasn't been introduced to the American audience on the level of, you know, a Velasquez or a Lesnar. So I think both these guys are like that. Maybe that makes them hard to market. I think Dos Santos and Carwin, though, the way they've knocked out people, Carwin, his first fight to ever go out of the first round was that Lesnar fight, and he lost. So here's the thing about this. There's some people that love, you know, hunkering down their money for a ticket or a pay-per-view and seeing like a great knockout. And there's some people that go, oh, I can't believe I just spent all that money for a 3-minute fight. Well, I can tell you what you're going to get in this one. No matter who wins, this isn't going past a round and a half. These are two of probably the most powerful guys in the UFC. One guy is going to knock out the other. It just comes down to who you think it's going to be.
And then the winner obviously gets the matchup with Velasquez for the belt. And if you just look at the high, I mean, they're both 12-1. They're both knockout artists. They like to end the fight quickly. I'm trying to find out, you know, my mind and, you know, gambler first here, who wins this thing. Is the dog De Los Santos, or I mean, Junior De Santos, is the dog, you think, live? Do you think he's got a chance?
Well, the dog is actually Shane Carwin.
No way. Is it really?
Yeah, Shane Carwin.
You got to be kidding me.
Junior Dos Santos, easily the second best heavyweight in the world. Wow. Maybe the first to some people.
I'm telling you right now. What's the line on that?
Carwin right now is about plus 150.
No way.
He opened it plus 200. Wow. But that was too high.
The public, I think, knows what they're talking about.
I would have definitely, I think a lot of people were surprised. This fight was a pick'em fight with Lesnar and Dos Santos. I think they're both minus 115. When it came out that Carwin was taking a spot, Carwin went up to 200, and I think I was surprised by that. A lot of people were surprised by that. Thought he'd be like 130, 140 range. Kind of corrected him down to 150, which is probably right. But I still think he's worth a shot. I mean, Dos Santos' most impressive win this far was Roy Nelson at 117. Maybe that's not as impressive anymore after we saw the way Roy Nelson was kind of handled by Frank Mir in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and do you think the fact that Carwin kind of obviously a fill-in late to get tape and prepare for this bout, do you think that factor is in at all, or do you think there's enough time for him to be at his best?
I don't think it factors in much. I think maybe the bigger factor is just how long he's been off. He hasn't fought since last July. He was already scheduled to be on this card, like we said. Of course, he was taking on this John Olav Anamano. I don't even know if I'm saying his last name right. A European guy. So maybe he was probably preparing a little bit different because this guy was going to try to take him down and, you know, tear his arm off, submit him. And that's not what Junior Dos Santos is going to do. So it might affect a little bit game plan wise. But I just think it's been so long for him that's the bigger question is, how does that time off factor in for Shane Carwin? And, you know, he's going to look a lot different this time. He's lost 30 pounds, which I think is crazy because, yeah, this guy was 265, but he's 265 of pure muscle, at least from my looks. I don't know how he lost 30 pounds. He looks totally different in the interviews I've seen with him. So maybe the biggest questions, I think, layoff and, you know, how does he adjust to his new body type? Because he is going to be different than every other time he's fought.
Folks, that's Case Kiefer of the Las Vegas Sun. He's like an MMA encyclopedia. He's rattling off names and card numbers and weight classes and weights and diet plans. And he's got all your MMA answers. He's at LasVegasSun.com. This is also our Fightcaster podcast that we put up. So it's MMA all the time. Moving on to the next flight. Kenny Florian, Diego Nunez. Florian obviously is the bigger name, the marquee guy. Nunez, a very respectable 16-1. The thing that stands out for me is that Nunez is only 5'10". My man, Florian. I mean, Nunez is 5'6". Florian's 5'10". I think physically, you got to give the edge to Florian. Am I wrong?
Yeah, definitely. But I also think this is another body type question. Florian has started his career at 185 pounds. Now he's fighting at 145. I mean, that's a pretty crazy stretch.
Imagine a lot of turkey bacon, man.
Yeah. He's never fought at 145. When he announced this, people thought he was crazy because he was big at 155. It had to have been hard to make that cut. Is he going to be just totally drained when he goes in there to fight Diego Nunez? That's my question. I think Kenny Florian will win. I will pick him. But since we always bring up the betting side, I think Diego Nunez is like plus 230, plus 250. I wouldn't bet on it, but if I'm betting, I'd have to take Nunez because you don't know how. I mean, what if Kenny Florian is just totally dehydrated? You don't know how your body's going to react to cutting that much weight. Nunez has fought his whole career at this. This is his weight class. So I think he has a shot. I also think people are underestimating him. People don't know him as well. He's not a big name like Florian. So I expect Florian to win, but Diego Nunez, I think, could surprise some people, especially if Florian has a tough time getting down to 145.
Yeah, and to lose that much weight, you see it all the time in boxing. You know, fighters don't want to, they're comfortable with where they're at. They don't want to go back down. You know, it's tough to adjust moving around without your muscle, your weight, and if your whole time in the gym is spent, Case, losing the weight, you can't practice the other things, and you could come out rusty. So, obviously, great point there about Florian and what he has to look out for and his obstacles. And UFC 131 on Saturday in Vancouver. And, Case, you've been the UFC man, as I said earlier, for the Sun this weekend. You were at the Tough Championships, and my man Clay Guida – I love that hair. I love
you,
how
I didn't know you loved Clay Guida.
Oh, I do. I do.
I knew Ryan Green, our absent co-host today, was a big Clay Guida guy.
I just love that guy's intensity out there, man. He's like, he reminds me of, and I don't know if they call him this, the Tasmanian Devil. You remember that cartoon?
Yeah, of course I remember that. Yeah, no, I don't think they call him
does
that.
Does he remind you of that?
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, just the way he bounces around and everything. But
it's like, full. If I had that kind of energy, baby, we'd be, whoo.
This would be a totally different show.
Totally different. But what is it about? I mean, he's now in the – and you got to feel bad for the guy he beat.
Anthony Pettis, right?
Anthony Pettis, at one point after 126, the press conference, it was like, yeah, Pettis is up next for the title bout. Ah, hold on. No, he's not. We're going to do these guys again, Maynard and
Edgar.
And Edgar. And then next thing you know, this guy Pettis, he's out. You know, he might have to go get a real job.
I don't think he's going to have to get a real job. I think the thing about Anthony Pettis, Clay Guida just out-wrestled him. I mean, it really wasn't a very exciting fight. I think he exposed some holes in Anthony Pettis' game. Anthony Pettis said that. The reason why, if you're Pettis, you still got to be upbeat is he's 24 years old. I mean, this guy, every other guy at the top of the division is older than him. He's got a really bright career, bright future ahead of him. You know, you hear after every fighter loses, he says, oh, you know, all this is going to do is going to make me better. I'm going to go back to the gym, blah, blah, blah. But I actually believe it from Anthony Pettis because I don't think this was his first fight in the UFC, obviously. He was in the WC. I don't think he's fought a wrestler on the level of Guida, and he wasn't used to someone just taking him down and kind of laying on him, throwing an elbow every once in a while. I think it's really going to focus Anthony Pettis to, you know, fix up his takedown defense, and I think we'll be hearing more from him. I don't think he's going to go get a job at the local Domino's just yet.
This is the Anthony Pettis apologist show. I mean, here's the way I look at it. Between Guida, Pettis, Maynard, and
Frankie Edgar.
Frankie Edger.
Name you keep forgetting. I
don't know why. Frankie Edgar. You got four guys. Any given day, they could get in there and beat each other. Would you agree on that? Don't shake your head.
I don't think so.
You got to be kidding me.
Look at how
Maynard and Edgar just fight to the, you know, to the blood comes out.
Yeah, but look
at
they're
even.
They're even. They're definitely even. I think either of those two guys could win. I think both of those two guys, even though some people might disagree with me, I think they're both way ahead of Pettis and Guida right now. At this point, even though the rankings wouldn't tell you so, what did Guida do to beat Pettis? He out-wrestled him. He took him down, just like I said.
But he won.
He did win. Here's the thing. Maynard and Edgar are both great wrestlers. They're two of the best wrestlers in UFC. He's not going to be able to do that to them.
They're not better than Brock, are they?
Well, I mean, no, probably not. But it's kind of hard because they're in different weight classes, obviously.
Here's my deal with UFC, and I told you this last week. Why is it when you win, it's not good enough unless you win with good style? Well, you know, you're not rewarded for a victory unless you knock the guy out in 10 seconds.
I'm not hating on Clay Guida. I like Clay Guida. But I just think that his strengths are the same strengths as Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar. I'm pulling you. I can't remember Frankie Edgar's name. I think his strengths are the same as those guys. And when your strengths are the same as those guys are the two best at that area. I'm not saying Clay Guida couldn't beat them, but I think that if he fights either one of them, I think he's got to be at least plus 250, betting wise. And you'd probably be running into the house betting Clay Guida.
I just think Clay Guida in UFC, you get fighters who are ultra respected to a fault, and I think fighters that are underappreciated to a fault. Would you agree with me on that?
I would agree, but Clay Guida, this was the first big win of his career. Every other time he got to the top, Kenny Florian dominated him. Kenny Florian was 100 times better than him.
Well,
Diego Sanchez was 100 times better than him. He's never beat a
top-level
guy other than Anthony
Pettis. So you're telling me Clay Guida
got
lucky?
No, I'm not saying he got lucky. I think he's great. I think he's top 10 easily.
Of all weight classes?
No, not of all weight classes. Top 10 in lightweight. I just think that if this is the title fight we see, which we probably won't at least for a year, because he's probably going to have to fight one more time before he gets a title shot, Guida, that is, I think that Gray Maynard or Frankie Edgar or Strikeforce champion Gilbert Melendez, who's already beaten him really bad when he was in Strikeforce, I think either of those three guys, you're going to see either submit Clay Guida or win easy unanimous decision.
So who gets the winner of Maynard Edgar?
Well, right now, probably Jim Miller. He's won seven fights in a row. He fights Ben Henderson, though, who Pettis just beat. He fights Ben Henderson in August, who I think Ben Henderson has a great chance. But, I mean, if Miller wins, he's won eight fights in a row. You can't not give him a title shot. He has two losses.
But did he win sexy? Was it pretty?
Prettier than Guida, definitely. Oh. I wouldn't say it's like 10 out of 10 pretty, but it's like 6 or 7 out of 10. But he has two career losses, and guess who the two career losses are to? Edgar and Maynard. Okay. Those two guys are the best.
But you just
saying.
Make it look like Guida was dodging like eggs and tomatoes being thrown into the octagon after the win. Hey, he won, but hey, he wrestled him. I mean, he won, baby. Well, okay, he got the hair going.
I think this is a big, I think it's an MMA judging question, which has come up now. A lot of people want to know. He took down Anthony Pettis time after time after time, out-wrestled him. But Pettis was working from the bottom on submissions, on your thing, jiu-jitsu, way more than Guida was. He was a lot closer to finishing the fight than Guida. For so long, MMA judging has been about the takedowns count for more. What do you think? You think the jiu-jitsu should count for more, or you think the wrestling is more important?
And that's the thing where MMA judging is still, coming into its own. It's still a relatively new sport, probably 10 years. You don't have quality judges at every event. And moreover, they might not be on the same page in terms of points. And that's why the UFC, to their credit, for the 130 fight, they had those monitors because sometimes...
And again this weekend, they had them again. They actually made them bigger this time.
Yeah, it's from 7 to 11 inches. But you can't tell what's going on the ground. So you're right. I mean, if you're dominating on the ground, is it count more than if you take somebody down? I still think if you take somebody down, you should get more points. But now you got to question Pettis. Okay, great, go for the submission, but maybe you ought to try to get back up to see if you could take him down to get some points.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. I'm not complaining. I think Guida won the fight, but I just think that it is a judging question. I mean, Pettis threw on more submissions. We saw a fight a lot like this at 130. You were there. It was Miguel Torres and Demetrius Johnson. Really controversial, a lot more controversial than Guida. Demetrius Johnson took down Miguel Torres more, but Miguel Torres was just going after submissions after submission after submission. A lot of people thought Torres won. Unanimous decision for Johnson. That was a lot closer, like I said, but the exact same thing that happened in this Guida-Pettis fight. Guida, like Johnson, kept taking him down, but Pettis, like Torres, kept working for the submission. You were at that fight. I mean, what'd you think of that one? I think you thought Torres might have won,
I thought Torres had won, but you got to remember, I'm kind of the old school judge. Like, I've covered some like Olympic style wrestling before. So I'm looking at just as a wrestling standpoint where Torres got Johnson down to the mat more. Now, this proves my point with UFC. Afterwards, it was like Torres, who had won the fight, had to like apologize for winning.
I think you got him confused. It was Johnson had to apologize for winning because he was taking him down more. Yeah, that's what you mean. I know what you mean.
But it's like they're asking him questions like, hey, explain how you won to the fans, because the fans on the message boards, they just feel that you're not that good. And I'm like, the guy just won? He posted a W scoreboard.
Yeah, he did. I thought he won, actually. I wasn't disappointed with either decision. I thought both those guys fought great. I know you were sitting next to basically Miguel Torres' uncle or something.
Yeah.
And he was really disappointed that he lost. I mean, did that guy say anything to you about
the whole time? that guy was epic. Yeah, my favorite thing with MMA media is just how many people there are just like fan websites. Like, if I ever, was out of the media and I wanted to go cover something, like, I'm a huge Ohio State football fan, I'll just go create this website like BuckeyesRule.com, and I'm going to go cover every Ohio State game so I could be close to it. So I'm sitting next to like the Miguel Torres.com fan club president. Guy's taking videos with his phone, which is, very against the etiquette for UFC. So it's absolutely hilarious, Case. But I guess moving forward, UFC 133, UFC is very active this summer. It's like every weekend or every other weekend, there's definitely a big event.
I think it's good you mentioned that. I think that might have been one of the things that hurt all the injuries, because it's great that they have all these cards, but then when someone like Cerrone's opponent gets hurt, who do you take? Then you're ruining another fight, so you got to go and sign someone.
Yeah, and I still think, wouldn't it be a great story, this guy basically off the scrap heap? Just maybe some guy who works out. You go into the gyms, like the day we went to the Randy Couture gym, there's all kind of people there that are just getting in shape or want to do it amateurly or, like to wear the UFC shirts and show their muscles and their tattoos and stuff. Wouldn't it be great if one of these guys were like, hey, you over there, listen, could you be in Vancouver on Saturday? We need you to lose to some guy. Oh, yeah, sure, sign me up. You see it in boxing all the time. Tommy Zaranski or Zibikowski.
Yeah,
You know, what's his last name?
Zibikowski. Man, but they are throwing some really bad guys.
Can of tomato soup, here you go. Go beat this guy. He fought four times in like 3 days.
The guy we saw him fight on the Mayorga undercard was just... that was probably the worst boxer I've ever seen.
Guy was 13-41-3. Somehow he had like three ties, like this real odd number of ties. And Tommy just pummeled him. It's like, all right, great, moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, that. I think everyone always wants to see that. It kind of happened earlier this year. UFC 127, a guy in Australia who'd been around forever. Although, I mean, he wasn't bad. He had a record like Brian Ebersole. He was like 35-7-2, but never fought on the big stage because he had some falling out with the UFC. He was a last-minute replacement in the last week, went and beat Chris Lytle, who was on a four-fight win streak. So we kind of have seen that this year. And I think in MMA, it's more likely to happen than boxing because there's so many more ways you can win. It's not just one... There's more ways you can win, basically. So I think there's a better chance it could happen. But that being said, I don't see Wagner Hosha, your boy, beating Donald Cowboy Cerrone.
Well, LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk, Case Kiefer, the Sun's MMA expert, along with Ray Brewer. And the one thing that's interesting for me, Case, now that Strikeforce and UFC's kind of merged, and I'll use Roy Nelson for example, UFC 130, Roy Nelson does so bad, it's up in the air if the guy continues to fight for UFC. Well, where else is there to go? I mean, are you going to go fight for Titan in Kansas City? That's kind of like your own, you know, your only option, where if you, not only if you don't win, if you don't perform well, if you lose a few times in a row, it's so competitive just to get in the UFC to get the fights, even fights that might not pay that good. You know, where do you go if you get cut? And I think that, Case, that kind of like either win or you're going to lose your chance. You got this small window. Now you got to take an opportunity of it. It really elevates the cream and let it rise to the crop. Top.
Yeah. I mean, I'd agree. I think that definitely a new landscape starting in the last couple of months with UFC and Strikeforce. I mean, really the only other viable national organization is Bellator. So you can get in Bellator or you're going the regional circuit. And that's
what
it.
About Titan?
Titan is not – Titan I would not consider national. I mean, who's Bellator has an MTV deal, so they are, you know, that's national. But I don't think Titan – no.
What about Phil? What's my guy?
Phil Baroni.
Phil Baroni.
I was wondering why you're bringing up Titan. That was
come
really
on,
random.
You got to mention Phil Baroni with that great walkout music on Bad to the Bone.
That's true. He got cut and he joined Titan. I don't know if he's won his fights there. Do you?
I don't know, but Steve Arbordop, who's a music freak, he likes all kind of music and has all kind of CDs and stuff. Steve, every MMA fight in the post-media conference, somebody will ask the fighters about their walk-in music. Like, hey, Rampage, I know you walked into – like, is it this important? Like, the music that you walk into defines who you are?
I mean, I kind of like it. I always think, like
– you're a music first guy. You played in a band. Steve is a band. I'm like – you know, I'm listening to NPR.
Ray, hear me. Here's the question. I've got 17,000 songs on my iTunes. I'd be surprised if you have 17.
I don't even have iTunes.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So I think that's the difference. But no, I think the walk-in music is a big part of it.
Do you
have
17,000 songs?
I think like 16,800 or something like that.
Do you have the best song ever, Belle Dip Bevo, That Girl Is Poison?
No, I did not have that. I'll go home and get it.
Steve, do you have that one, Steve? You don't? Man, that is ridiculous. You guys are disappointing me.
I'm sorry. I don't know what to say, but you know, when you go to like a baseball game, even aren't you listening to what the guys are coming up to when they walk to the batter's box? That's always what I'm thinking. I'm always so happy, and there's always one on just about every team. A guy that plays Pantera, I love it. I love that guy because he's coming out to Pantera.
What would you come out to?
I mean, I can't.
I got my song already.
I'll tell you what. I'll have to get back to you next week because it's been too tough. I do love Baroni coming out the Bad to the Bone, though. That's awesome. What would you come out to?
Coming down the home stretch of the show, LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. Also, the Fightcaster podcast on the Sun site. I'll leave you with the song of the day, the song that I come out to when Ray Banana Pill Brewer wins the championship. Papa Roach's Last Resort, Cut My Life into Pieces, LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. Don't get me going because I'm wearing the belt, baby. Case, be safe in Vancouver. Get your motor running.